It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh, hello, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome. Oh, look at that. Look at that. I got email to check. This is news to me, and today is September 2nd, 2020. So we're going to run through just some news and listen to some tunes. And then, what do you know, it'll be time for Tobe and the DGC. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's pretty exciting. It's exciting times. So let's start off with our favorite thing ever.
World news.
Now, so if you remember, Alexei Navalny, the Russian opposition leader, was poisoned. Germany is now saying it was poisoned with Novichok. So what does that mean? Let's ask our friends the BBC. There is unequivocal proof that Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny was poisoned with a Novichok nerve agent, Germany has said. Chancellor Angela Merkel said he was a victim of attempted murder, and the world would look to Russia for answers. Mr. Navalny was airlifted to Berlin in a coma after falling ill on a flight in Siberia last month. His team said he was poisoned on President Vladimir Putin's orders. The Kremlin's dismissed the allegation, and the Kremlin spokesman called on Germany for a full exchange of information, and Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova complained the Novichok allegations were not backed up by evidence. Where are the facts? Where are the formulas? At least some kind of information, she asked. The Novichok nerve agent was used to poison former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter in the UK in 2018 while they survived. A British woman later died in the hospital. The UK accused Russia's military intelligence of carrying out the attack. So, this is pretty serious business. The question is, what happened to Navalny? Mr. Navalny fell ill on a flight from Tomsk to Moscow, and they think he was poisoned at a cup of tea in the airport. The flight of the prominent Putin critic was diverted to Omsk, where doctors treated him for 3 days before he was transferred. So, So that's kind of it. Novichok is just a nerve agent. It blocks messages from the nerves to the muscles, causing a collapse of many bodily functions. And so you can read more about it on the BBC or just anywhere. Just type it into your favorite search engine like DuckDuckGo or your CRX node. All right. So this is a fun. There is a fun story here. I think it could be a movie soon. It's got a kind of a sad backstory, but it's sad news. Everyone realizes news to me. There's lots of sad news, but check this out. Karate grannies. As assaults persist, Nairobi's women fight back. So it's Thursday morning. We'll just give you the short a couple of paragraphs of this, but this is from the Christian Science Monitor. It's Thursday morning and Jane Watagini is ushering a group of older women into a makeshift hall in Nairobi's Korokogocho informal settlement. Around them, morning sun filters through the fissures in the wooden planks and iron sheets that make up the building's walls. She's talking about her grandchildren's poor appetite when the last of her students, 100-year-old Rebecca Wambui, steps in with the aid of a wooden walking stick. With that, the mood grows suddenly serious, and within a few minutes, the 15 grannies have transformed the hall into a frenetic dojo, directing punches and kicks at an improvised punching bag made from a sack stuffed with old clothing. Their screams of no, no, no ring through the air as each woman takes her turn at the bag. Welcome to Ujamaa Karate Program, also known locally as Shoso Jikinji, or Grandmother Protect Yourself, where older women in Korogocho study martial arts for self-defense. They may not be your typical karatekas, but for many, the skills they learn here have been life-saving. In an area with little in the way of policing or social support, several of the women say they've managed to fend off would-be attackers using knowledge and confidence they learned here. So, this is pretty neat. If you only get a few articles a month by visiting the Christian Science Monitor's website, but the photos are really great. It's high quality, and the story is a bit longer, but it's just really neat. It's a great story about how a community came together, decided to teach themselves self-defense, and solve a problem they were having. And our last kind of international news here, because as always, the U.S. is the show the whole world's watching. But we've got something interesting from Counterpunch that I thought I would bring up, and that's called the Twilight of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So you guys remember NATO? NATO is an old thing. So check it out. The article goes to start with, it's time for the U.S. to debate the downsizing, if not the dissolution, of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. U.S. national security would be strengthened by the demise of NATO because Washington would no longer have to guarantee the security of 14 Central and East European nations, including the Baltic states of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. European defense coordination and integration would be more manageable without the participation of authoritarian governments in Poland and Hungary. Key West European nations presumably would favor getting out from under the use of U.S. military power in the Balkans, the Middle East, and Southwest Asia, which has made them feel as they were tins of shoe polish for American boots. Go ahead and pour this tea real quick. I made this yesterday and put it in the fridge. It's nice and cold because it is 100 something degrees outside. Alright. So basically, the article goes on to argue that NATO has served its purpose. And so the argument is basically arguing that NATO is holding down a lot of member countries. And the success from 1949 to 1991 was marked by a common perception of the Soviet threat, which is the key to solidarity in any alliance framework. In 2020, however, the 30 members of NATO no longer share a common perception of the Russian threat in Europe. The U.S. has one view of Russia, the key nations of West Europe have a more benign view, and the East Europeans perceive a dire threat that the others do not share. The U.S. has always expressed some dissatisfaction with the asymmetric burden-sharing and risk-sharing within the alliance, and the Trump administration has threatened to withdraw from NATO over the burden-sharing issue. So, with any foreign policy kind of discussion, it's kind of long, but it did kind of ask this great question, which was like, what's the function of NATO now? If there's not a shared goal, or a shared enemy, is the alliance worth keeping? So it's something to think about. I don't have like a what's right or wrong. I just thought that was kind of interesting there. Oh, we have. Oh, look at that. I thought we were done. We have two bonus stories, I guess, for our friends' world news. The first one is kind of sad. It's our first COVID-ish story of the day. In Barcelona, from behind large windows, Barcelona's Central Park nursing home, elderly residents blow kisses, give virtual hugs, and speak to loved ones on the other side of the glass using mobile phones. Restrictions on visits are still in place across Spain as it reels from a resurgence in COVID-19 infections. But for visitors, the regular interaction beats the experience of only seeing residents on a computer screen. They no longer see a screen, a small square. They really see how their family member is doing, said the nursing home's director, Eduardo Badia. In-person visits are permitted, but only occasionally, and they are carried out in the resident's garden to help visitors respect social distancing rules. An 89-year-old woman smiles as she pretends to play with the dog her neighbors have brought for her to see through the ground floor window of the home's communal room. It's contradictory, happy on the one hand and frustrating on the other hand, said Christina, 68, after seeing her 94-year-old mother who survived the coronavirus. Every day makes it harder not to have the close contact she had before the pandemic when she visited her mother every night. So, this is a great little story of working around restrictions. So, that's pretty cool. And our last one, this comes from the BBC, our good friends there. And this one is from Canada, our neighbors to the north in the U.S. WWF, Canada, endangered species face staggering losses. That's right. Canadian wildlife at risk of extinction has undergone staggering losses over the past 50 years. The World Wildlife Fund, which is the WWF, is a conservation group. In a report, the charity says that species at risk of global extinction have seen their Canadian populations fall by over 40% between 1970 and 2016. Populations of species that are at risk of extinction in Canada itself fell even more dramatically by 59%. The report said human activity was mostly to blame. Wednesday's report is based on the Living Planet Index, which measures the ecological performance of 883 species around the world, including the North Atlantic right whale and the barren ground caribou. The report found that endangered species were likely to face at least five threats, such as habitat loss, land and shoreline developments, and pollution, and that human activity was mostly to blame. So, we, you know, everything seems like a cycle. In the 80s and 90s, we were all about save the planet and save the Earth, and then we cared about it really strongly for a year or two, and then we kind of stopped caring, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh no, all the animals are dying. Oh yeah, and so then we care a bit about it some more, without real change, without systemic change and societal changes, you know, it doesn't really have any long-standing impact. So if you can go see a national park and see a glacier, or go to a zoo or something and see a whale, you might want to do that, because, I mean, soon enough, they'll all be gone. So just, you know, if you're going to have kids, have them soon so that there's resources for them. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and play something that's a bit less sad, I guess. We'll just go ahead and play a quick song, and then we will jump into our domestic news, because there's a lot of that. So I've got some Laura Imbruglia lined up for you. Now, I was going to play a sadder song and realized that that's not what we want. We need something happier, you know? So this song is called I'm Not, and it's not released. It's an unreleased song. You're listening to News to Me, and I'll be back after this song.
To Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Yep. Welcome, one and all. This is News to Me, and we are about 15 minutes away from the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 19:30. Big shout out if you've made it into COM, and if you want to join in the chat, you can join through COM. You just SSH to SDF. Go ahead. Type COM, hit enter, bam, you're in COM, you are already one of the cool kids. Hit G for go to, type Anon Radio, all lowercase, hit enter. Now you're in the chat. You can press lowercase r to get the most recent chat log. Boom, now you're caught up. You don't even have to, you can even pretend like you were lurking the whole time. Anyway, let's jump into some U.S. news. I think this is one that this is something I'm kind of excited about. This is from Reason. They put this out today from Scott Shackford, not Rusty Shackelford, but Scott Shackford. California's inmate firefighters may soon be allowed to continue their careers after release. Kind of complained about this a little bit because there's a lot of prisoners in California that are then conscripted and forced to fight fires. But then once they're trained how to be firefighters, they can't actually do the firefighter job out once they get out of prison. Well, California kind of saw that, noticed that at least. So a summer heat wave led to another round of wildfires in California, which drew attention to the state's dependence on prison inmates as firefighters and the terrible fact that licensing regulations stopped the men and women from continuing this work after they're freed. But that may change with AB 2147, which lawmakers just passed on August 30th and now awaits Governor Gavin Newsom's signature. The bill, sponsored by Assemblymember Alois Gomez-Reyes, a Democrat from San Bernardino, creates a process for former inmates to get their records expunged when they're released so that they can qualify for a state license to fight fires professionally. Currently, California's oppressive licensing laws prevent former inmates from being able to earn the proper emergency technician license because they have criminal records. But every summer, when wildfires grow out of control, the state depends on current inmates who earn $1 per hour to assist firefighting crews. Over the past couple of years, there's been more and more media attention paid to the outrage that these people cannot pursue firefighting as a career after they're released. So, this is pretty cool. The story goes on to explain like how this law would be implemented and what needs to happen for it to actually get on the books. Main thing is the governor needs to sign it. Well, let's jump over to the Midwest. Milwaukee area letter carriers are refusing to go along with mail delays. So this is actually from weeks ago. This is from August 19th, but I don't think we covered it. So I'll just do the quick version. This is from labornotes.org, which is a site I don't use all the time. But let's do the answer here. So here's an excerpt. To mobilize for the meeting, I printed up a little flyer to advertise the date, time, location, and agenda. We held it at 7:30 a.m. on a Friday, 30 minutes before we all clock in. The meeting was a huge success. Nearly every carrier who worked that day showed up. We discussed ideas for fighting back, specific contract issues that had arisen, aspects of our jobs we noticed were being neglected, Weingarten rights, and when to request a steward and how to stand up to management. We all agreed that we would refuse to work off the clock and we would tend to all the important aspects of our work that were being neglected. For instance, we agreed to do full vehicle safety checks with a partner every morning, including properly disinfecting all frequently touched areas. We agreed to deal properly with holds, forwards, and vacant addresses. We discussed how to fill out delayed mail reports and why it's important not to count on management to pull down the correct numbers for us. We agreed to work in a safe manner while on the route, taking care to apply and reapply sunscreen, stay properly hydrated, take bathroom breaks, avoid hazardous shortcuts, wear seat belts, and curb our tires when parking. After the meeting, when we marched in as one, right on time for work, the look on our supervisor's face was priceless. So, anyway. What? Hamburger must be high. I don't know what that means. Anyway, big shout out in comm. We got all sorts of people in here today. We got SMJ, as always, good friend X1, Rat XUE, I don't know how to say that. And, of course, Jim Log. Well, he was in and he left, so I don't know if he's around. But anyway, there's all sorts of people. It's probably Jazzmaz hanging around, too. So, boop, boop, ba-doo. So I just thought this was a great story because it showed that unions are really useful and they matter, and it's workers taking care of themselves. They're not, like, trying to impede the business, but they are going to force the business to actually treat the workers properly. So anyway, I thought that was great. Just a quick one here, because we kind of talked about this before, but as you know, the people that are in ICE detention centers, Yesterday we talked about them being on hunger strikes. Well, those are people voluntarily not eating. In Louisiana, we've just got thousands of people in jails with no lights, water, or electricity, or food. And they're just kind of trapped in an abandoned prison, which is a horrible way to die. Here we go. So, detainees describe dire conditions after hurricane leaves ICE jails without water or power. Bathrooms were out for days, temperatures soared, and foul odors festered, detainees report. So, Hurricane Laura's trail of destruction left several immigration detention centers in Louisiana without power or water, creating such dire conditions at one facility that detainees reported relieving themselves on their dishes, covering up their waste with torn-up pieces of plastic bags to control odors, and sleeping near toilets filled with feces and menstrual blood. Sorry if you're eating lunch, SMJ. So after the Jackson Paris Correctional Center lost power and water last Thursday, temperatures soared without air conditioning, and people spent days without working bathrooms, according to six people detained there by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Detainees said on Monday that the toilets still weren't working and that guards let them sleep outside on Friday because the heat was unbearable. On Saturday, the detainees protested, leading to a disturbance that prompted officers to use force against the detainees. The show of force and the less lethal tools we use squashed this event, Brown wrote on Facebook. He said water and power had been restored to the facility. So, this is just the state of the nation. So
I want to hear the music.
Okay. I want to hear the music. Yeah, I'll do my best to calm down. Usually on this show, whenever if I get too energized, you know, if I get too energetic, then it's like, all right, calm yourself down. I would play some music, but we've only got 8 minutes to go. So I'm going to read a couple more stories before we play some more music. Let's go through some headlines. So the fearless leader told Sarah Sanders to take one for the team after Kim Jong-un wink. So Donald Trump told Sarah Sanders she would have to go to North Korea and take one for the team after Kim Jong-un winked at them at the then White House press secretary during a summit in Singapore in 2018. Kim Jong-un hit on you, a delighted Trump joke, according to Sanders. New memoir, he did it. He fucking hit on you. Speaking for myself will be released next Tuesday. The Guardian obtained a copy. And rather than a tell-all by a former staffer or a burn-all by a hostile family member, the book is a pan to the president by a loyal follower with the subtitle Faith, Freedom, and the Fight of Our Lives Inside the Trump White House. So, very interesting. It will be something to look for. And Melania Trump reportedly used private email while in the White House. There's no precedent for that. Sorry I chased you away, Void Pearls. Or I hope I didn't chase you away. So, Melania Trump used private email and messaging while in the White House, according to a former senior advisor and estranged friend. Stephanie Winston Wolkoff spoke to the Washington Post and claims she corresponded multiple times a day with the First Lady via private channels. According to the Post, the messages discussed official business, including government hires and contracts, detailed schedules for the President and the First Lady during the Israeli and Japanese state visits, strategic partnerships for the First Lady's Be Best initiative, logistics of the Easter egg roll, and finances for the presidential inauguration. So, this will be a developing story and surely be spun pretty hard on all sides. So keep an eye on that. All right, what else do we got? Well, this is kind of this is news. The BBC is reporting a Georgia man who struck reporter's rear pleads guilty to sexual battery. So a man in the U.S. state of Georgia filmed striking a female reporter's backside during a live TV broadcast has pleaded guilty to a sexual battery charge. Thomas Calloway was sentenced to a year on probation and must pay a $1,000 fine. Reporter Alex Bozarjian had been covering a run when Calloway hit her. She said she forgave him in court on Tuesday, adding, "Nobody has the right to touch anybody or slap anybody for their own amusement. May seem harmless to other people," she told ABC 8 News, "but it's obviously a toxic thought pattern, because what Mr. Calloway did on that bridge validates the idea that I don't deserve my own personal space." Hamburger must be high. I don't know what that means. I am so confused. Anyway, if you want to get on all the in-jokes, check out Calm. It's a blast. So, here, we will... You know what? We don't have time for a second song. Sorry, I may have lied. We're just going to run through the headlines, and then I'll play us out. So, Reason has an article about the DAA did a civil forfeiture of $43,000 from a woman. After flying from Tampa to North Carolina for a casino reopening, she and her husband had dinner with friends, and they were going to buy a car. They were interested in buying a car. They paid for it in cash. When the couple had to cut their trip short because of a death in the family, Jones put that money along with the cash she had in a carry-on bag and headed to the airport. So when they tried to fly with it, they stuck it. They took the money. And once they get it back, good luck. So she's part of a class action suit. Truthout is another site that I like, and they're reporting defund the police doesn't mean hire private guns, but cities are doing just that. So in word games, of course, basically what's happening is private security firm employs security guards, and then its clients typically include government agencies, businesses, and individuals seeking security. So the firm's been deluged with requests from business owners worried that uprisings will target their windows, wealthy residents of the city's north side fearing for their gated community, and the city itself seeking to supplement its own police force. So soon, it's just very interesting. It's a very interesting predicament. I don't know. What is going on? Alright, we're going to run through. We've got just about 3 minutes, which means we've got about 2 minutes of talking time to go. So, we've also got a fracking company has made it rain toxic water upon New Mexico without penalty. That's right. Penny Aucoin, her husband Carl, and their son Gideon, and their daughter Skylar have had their lives devastated by the fracking industry. So, they moved to Carlsbad, New Mexico 6 years ago during a massive expansion of drilling. One of the most the drilling began, it was loud, the birds were dying, but get this, shortly after that, Penny began feeling the health impacts. Blisters appeared on her face as more drilling pads were installed, some of them literally across the street. Their bedroom walls shook as the drilling pads were constructed, installing both a physical and psychological invasion on their family home. She started having nosebleeds, respiratory issues, and headaches. Carl discovered a nodule on his tongue. Then, when a pipeline near their home burst in January, they, along with their home and their animals, were showered with toxic chemicals. When they walked outside to investigate the bang they heard, which was followed by gushing fluids, they believed it was raining. But what they thought was rain was, in fact, produced water, the byproduct of fracking. So, pretty sad news there. So, yeah. So, very sad indeed. Basically, their family's days are filled with doctor's appointments, and a veteran regularly visits the VA in Albuquerque, hoping the nodule on his tongue doesn't turn into cancer. Any dream of their life returning to what it was before is long gone, and now they're just trying to survive. So it's very sad, and the sooner we get off of our oil addiction, the better. Other subjects, the Trump administration is backing out of a $647 million ventilator deal after ProPublica investigated the price. We talked about that on the show. It's pretty rad. All right. So yeah, so basically the Trump group put off ventilator orders, and then whenever it came time that was like, oh, we need them, they went ahead and accepted a deal where they were going to end up paying like 5 or 6 times what they should have been. Nancy Pelosi got her hair done, and that caused a controversy for some reason, and a Kennedy lost in a senatorial race, which was a big surprise. What else? The GOP's corrupt, and, oh, lost international story. France's Macron reasserts Iraq's sovereignty on first official Baghdad visit. So, that about does it. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. And, DGC coming up for you. Get well, numbers,
well,
lady.
That sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. And every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
All right, bye!
7, 6.